Good morning. We're going to be in Matthew 25 most of the morning. Mason's reading this morning fit perfectly with what I want to talk about. I used something that I'd prepared for his class last week, and we both of us must still have been thinking about it. Matthew 25, starting in verse 14, contains the parable of the talents. And the parable of the talents is one that I've been over several times, and you sort of underestimate. Everybody says, well, you get back in the scripture and you hit the same scripture you've read 100 times, and then you'll hit it and something new will click. And I was surprised how much I found new in this, because I've given lessons on this before, then I found new stuff in here. But we're going to start in verse 14, and I'll read it through fairly quickly first, and then we'll just kind of look at it a little more closely. A lot of my verses will be in the New International this morning. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with the 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid, and I went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed? Well, then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So that's the parable of the talents. So we're just going to kind of work our way down and look at some of these verses. The first thing I want you to notice is in verse 14, he entrusted his servants with these things. And likewise, we receive great gifts. Great gifts are put in our care. The primary gift is Jesus' sacrifice. We just talked about that. We're also given time, health, resources, His Word. Some of us have been given children or a spouse. We all have family and friends. We have opportunities and we have talents and abilities. So these things are all entrusted to us. So he gives us these things because he expects us to use them. In verse 15, I want you to notice they're not all given the same. You know, in our country, I think because of the Declaration of Independence, we think of the line, all men are created equal. All men aren't created exactly equal. We all have our own strengths and weaknesses. Some of us have talents that are different than others. But we're all greatly loved by our Creator. None of us is a second-class citizen. We're just different. 1 Corinthians 12, it speaks to this. Starting in verse 4, it says, there are different kinds of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are different kinds of service, but the same Lord. There are different kinds of working, but the same God works all of them in all men. So they weren't all given the same. He's entrusted us these gifts. He has not given us all the same gifts. But we are all valued and we are all meant to use them. If you look at verses 16 and 17, it shows the man who'd received 5 talents and the man who'd received 2 talents. When did they go and invest this money? They went right away. The King James doesn't really speak this. The New International says at once. At once. There's a sense of urgency. He's going to put his master's gift to work. In this case, it's money. Let's go to Proverbs 6 for a moment. Starting in verse 4. Allow no sleep to your eyes, no slumber to your eyelids. Free yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter, like a bird from the snare of the fowler. Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit and scarcely like an armed man. Talking to this person Solomon's describing in Proverbs 6 has no sense of urgency. He does not worry about using the gifts he's been given. He feels like he has plenty of time. Plenty of time for that later. But time passes with deceptive speed. And if we don't use our gifts deliberately, we may lose the chance. In James 4 it says, "For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away." So we've been entrusted with these gifts. We're not all given the same. But we don't necessarily have as much time as we think to use them. And then back to Matthew 25. In verse 18, we get to the servant that was given one. It says, "But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money." So he was paralyzed by fear. Is fear bad? No. Proverbs 1 and 7, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge." So fear itself is not bad. But in this case, he is fearing something bad that will happen, right? Proverbs 10:24, "The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon them." It is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Fear of the wicked, it shall come upon them. Think a little bit about driving. We're fortunate for this lesson to live in the Midwest where we get snow every year. This last winter, I came on some black ice, and before I knew it, I was in the ditch sliding pretty fast. And there's one tree for 100 yards in either direction, and I pegged it. And I thought that was circumstances or just chance. But do you know professional drivers have that same problem? If they go off of a course, especially when they're starting out and they haven't set good habits, if you're sliding in a car and you see a pole, you're trying not to hit the pole, but you're looking at the pole, all your focus and energy is directed at the pole, what are you going to hit? The pole. Professional drivers train themselves to look where they want to go, because when they put all their focus where they don't want to go, that's where they end up. It's very hard to stop. Takes lots of practice, and I wonder if maybe that's why I managed to hit that tree. I'm like, oh, there's a tree. Let's hit it. But we tend to drive toward what we focus on, and that focus can be either because of love or fear. Either one works, whichever you're focused on. And I think that's why we're told fear of God is the beginning of knowledge, because when we're afraid of God, we're focused on God. So who do we go to? Where are we headed? Going to God. Perfect love casts out fear. Perfect love, you love God. Where are you headed? What are you focused on? You're headed to God. You're headed the same way in both instances. Your motivation has changed. What you focus on, that's what you go toward. So fear is not bad in and of itself. If we are afraid of something happening, we're making it more likely to happen. We talked a little bit about this in class. If you have some temptation you're trying to avoid, The one I run into a lot reading is a lot of people want to stop smoking, but then they're thinking about staying away from it. Don't smoke, don't smoke, don't smoke. And they're thinking about smoking for long they smoke. They need to be thinking about good breath, no coughing or wheezing, longer life, saving money, all the good things that come with being a non-smoker. And all of our bad habits are like that. If you try to avoid desserts, you're in trouble. You need to find something really good that you can focus on that isn't a dessert. We tend to go toward what we're after. And this is what this man was doing. If we keep going, verse 19, after a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. So the master is paying attention. He knows exactly what each one of us has received, even though we all received something a little different. He had entrusted that to us. He expects to get something back. And he has an idea what he can reasonably expect to get back from us. Much better idea than we have. Luke 12:48 says, unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall much be required. Okay, I'm going to read 20 through 23 now. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. So this is the accounting. Master, he said, you entrust me with 5 talents. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. This is the result. I want to show you something I ran across recently in some of my other readings here. Anytime we have something that we want to do or we're going to attempt to do, we start out with this potential. We have this potential. Where do we get the potential? From God. God gives us the potential. And each of us has a belief in how much potential we have. Whether you tell me I have more or less, I have a belief inside myself. I have an idea of what I think I'm capable of. That's what I think of my potential. That's my belief. So my belief of my potential moves me to action. These two men, they believed that they could invest their master's money and give him more than he'd given them, right? So their belief in their potential brought them to action. They took appropriate action. They got results. They doubled his money. And then he comes back and says, well done. That was good. That was just what I was hoping you were going to do. So what does that do to their belief? Goes up. He gives them back the money they had. He says, go do it again. Did their potential go up? They had the potential the whole time. Their belief went up. So if you have a lot of belief in your potential, how much action will you take? More action. You do more action, you get better results? And then what does that do to your belief? More. So then you take more, and then you get better results. It feeds on itself. Okay, now, do that same thing with the other guy. His master gives him 1 talent. He's scared to death. He says, I can't do this. His belief is in the tank. Okay? What kind of action does that lead to? Minimal. You get minimal action, you get minimal. What does that do to your belief? Even less. What happens if I replace these words with? What if I make potential gifts, action, works, belief, faith? I've been looking at a lot of this motivational stuff, and I've taken the position of kind of the Bereans. Let's look and see if it's so. And I found this, and I started looking at this parable. It sure looks like it's so. It sure looks like it's so. And it clarifies the connection with faith and works. It's not faith or works. If you don't have works, you don't have faith. Because if you did, it'd move you to works. If you don't have works, you don't have faith. But if you don't have faith, you're not going to have much for works. It's impossible. So if you have little belief, you'll have little action, you'll have little results, and then you have even less belief. Success begets success, failure begets failure because of this, because it reinforces itself. Let's look at 24 for a minute. Then the man who had received the one talent came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you. Would he have liked to double his master's money? He knew his master was a hard man. He says so. He knows his master is expecting more than he gave him. So why did he bury it in the ground? He's afraid. He's afraid. But he's guaranteed a bad result. The problem with this is desire is not in there. Desire is not in here. He wants the results. But when your desire and your belief are different, you always manifest the belief. That's why all of us would like to change some circumstance or behavior that we have. But if we don't believe that we can do it with Christ's help, if we don't believe it's possible, then we manifest what we believe, not what we want. Does that make sense? So when your desires are different from your beliefs, you will always manifest what you believe. He wants it to grow, but he believes that he can't do it, so he buries the talent. When he buries the talent, he knows the outcome already. He just knows that he won't lose this one. He knows he won't have any extra, but he knows he won't lose this one. Speaking of desire and belief, I want you to consider an Olympic athlete for a minute. Who in the world has more desire than an Olympic athlete? Here's somebody, you know, every 4 years it's winter or summer. So, but isn't it? No, it's every 2 years. So every 4 years they have a winter or summer. So if I'm a summer Olympian and I'm a runner, I'm training for 4 years for one tournament. 4 years. How high is my desire? Many of you are probably already aware of this, but for the longest time, no one had run a 4-minute mile. Okay? Nobody had done it. They thought it was impossible. They thought it was humanly impossible. And then Roger Bannister ran a 4-minute mile. He broke that barrier. Within the next 2 years, 37 people broke that barrier. Why? Their belief caught up with their desire. These were motivated people. I mean, they're training daily for a tournament that's 4 years away. Motivated people. But their belief didn't match their desire. Once he did that, they said, hey, it's possible. If he can do it, maybe I can do it. And then they start putting in the action, and they get the results, and it keeps going. Okay, something else I want you to notice about this. Which of these is directly from God? Okay. Which ones do we have control over? Now this one, you could argue, one of the ways we get faith is to pray for it. So we don't want to rule God out of helping us with either of these, but the ones we have some control over are these two. Which one do we tend to doubt? Why? We're doubting the one that God gave us instead of the one that we control. Who are we doubting? We don't feel like it. We feel like we're doubting ourselves, but who made us? God made us. So you see, the part we tend to doubt is what God's provided. And one of the great blessings of the new law, I believe, is that it makes us pay attention to how we're thinking. It's self-actualization. We're thinking about how we're thinking. Whereas before, we were just thinking about what we're doing in the old law. Now we're thinking about what we're doing. Verse 26, his master replied, "You wicked, lazy servant, so you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed." What did he waste? He wasted time, he wasted ability and opportunity. That's what he wasted. Verse 27, what should he have done? Put the money to work, right? Should have put the money to work. Could he have known this? Yeah. The other two servants knew, right? He didn't have to know it himself. All he had to know is that there was somebody he could go ask. He could find out. Find what others are doing that are getting what you want and go do that. Their success leaves clues. It leaves clues for you. Though he was lazy, he didn't do that. Verse 28. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. Isn't this what he was afraid of? He was afraid of losing his master's money. He managed to give him back the 1 talent he was given, but he ends up losing it in the end. Exactly what he was focused on, what he was afraid of, happened. He's focusing on the post and not the road, and he hit the post. Slid right into it. Verse 29 says, "For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him." This is why people say, "Well, why is it the rich get richer and the poor get poorer?" This is why. Because the rich believe they have the potential to take action and get results, and then they get results, and they think, "Hey, that was easy." They keep going. And the poor, they put in a minimal action because they don't believe it's possible. They're kind of given a token so they can say, "I tried." They put in a minimal action, and then they get minimal results. They see, "I knew it wouldn't work. I knew it wouldn't work. I knew I'm not that kind of guy." Those are special people that have special skills. They're not like you and me. Well, they believe. They believe. But this is not just money. People who search out wisdom get wiser. People who search out God become more godly. Why doesn't he have? The verse says, "For everyone who has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him." Why doesn't he have? He received some, didn't he? They didn't all receive the same, but everybody received some. He wasn't using it. He wasn't using it. He buried it in the ground. If you have, you're given more. And we see this borne out in our experience here. How do you get stronger? Huh? Let's say physically stronger. How do you get physically stronger? You use what you have. Even, Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he was at his peak, how did he get bigger like that? He used what he had. He had some enhancements that helped, I guess, but even with those, he wouldn't have gotten any bigger if he didn't use what he had. You do more work, and you'll be able to do even more work. What happens if you don't use them? We see from people who are paralyzed or bedridden for a long period of time, your muscles atrophy. You don't use it, it goes away. How about mentally? If you use your faculties, you stay sharp. If you don't use your faculties, you get duller. There was a study done about nuns. Catholic nuns, a lot of them will stay teaching until they die. They never stop teaching. And there's very little instance of Alzheimer's among them. Way under the norm for the number of nuns there are. Because they're using it constantly. The more you read, the faster and faster you'll read with better comprehension. Because you get better. You don't use it, you lose it. Conscience, use it and it will serve you well. Ignore it and you'll lose it. 1 Timothy 4:2 speaks of consciences seared with a hot iron. How did that happen? My conscience warned me, I blew it off. I don't want to listen to you. You're telling me I can't do what I want to do. And the Word. if you go still in Timothy 4, verses 7 and 8, says, have nothing to do with godless myths and old wives' tales. Rather, train yourself to be godly. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. What does that imply about godliness? He's comparing it to physical training. So that implies that it has a similar work required, right? You have to use it. You have to try things. You have to study. If you... For instance, we use talking to people a lot, and there are a lot of different ways to serve, and that's just one of them, but that's one people tend to be worried about. If you want to get better talking to people, start trying to talk to people. You may crash and burn a few times, but they'll be none the worse for wear, and you may learn something. I mean, you don't get better at anything without trying. Let's go back to Matthew 25. I have one more verse. You would think if someone was given a lesson on a specific parable, they would put a bookmark there. That would be clever. The last verse in that parable, verse 30, says, and throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This is the outcome of that irrational fear. Many people think that they're a lost cause. They say, I'm no good. God wouldn't want me anyway. If I walked in the church, the place would burst into flame, or I would burst into flame. Right? You hear that from people? They just don't believe that they're good enough. Even though the potential isn't from them, the potential is from Christ. Christ has no limit on his potential. Christ's potential is much higher than we can fathom. Every time I try to fathom it, I just sort of get overloaded. You think of all the power there. He's involved in creation and just the enormity of the creation. He has no limit. But their lacking belief keeps them from taking action. Real minimal actions required. We talked this morning about the first Gentiles. They just had to know about Christ. They didn't have to know all the other stuff yet. There's plenty of time to learn for that after your soul is connected with Christ. You don't want to put that off till you know everything, or you'll never do it, because we never know everything. But they think they're a lost cause. How much potential is there to be saved if we just take out God and Christ? None. Then it is a lost cause, right? So if they never get to the point where they know Christ, then they're right. They're right. There's no potential without Christ. None. But with Christ, the potential is unlimited. So, looking at this, if we're talking with someone, our job is to bring them from one talent to at least two. We want them to say, you know, I was there. I'm not any better than you. I had the same things. I still struggle with things. Not any better. You see me here, and you think I'm so far above you, and Jesus is up there. And from there, you can't even see the difference. So we say, hey, I was right where you are. And I couldn't get over here by myself. Because we're wanting this. We want the results. We want to get to heaven. Can't spell. We want to get to heaven. We want to avoid hell. Put that over here. We want to get away from it. We want the results. And I was in the same place, but I found Christ. And he, with Christ, he gave me an action that was easy that I could do, a light burden, right? And he provided the results. They've got to know that their potential is not them. Potential is Christ. And that our potential is not us. It's Christ. And that we're no better. I just ran into this, and so many things made sense that hadn't really clicked before. I hope it's been useful. These are my thoughts for this morning. If there's anybody here who is lacking this potential, he's made it so easy. Please take care of that. And we'd love to help you with that as we stand and sing the song of invitation.